Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm doing great.
A special thank you to Katie for her assistance on this case.
Yes, Katie, thank you very much. You're awesome. So what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight we're talking about a case that has two victims. April 16th, 1995, Irvine, California. A body is discovered on the side of the road. Police are called. The body is of a young man. He is wrapped in blue towels. It is apparent that he has been mutilated. His body is covered in gashes, most likely caused by a meat cleaver or a machete. Authorities will link him to another call earlier that morning at about 12:30. Two friends had left El Cortez, a dance club in Santa Ana, and had driven a mile or so before stopping at a red light. A white van had struck them from behind. Gonzalo Ramirez and Noel Reyes suspected it was just an accident, and Gonzalo got out to assess the damage. Reyes noticed three people in the van, two men and a woman. One of the men got out of the van, proceeds to strike Gonzalo, and Reyes, sensing that he may be in danger as well, runs to get help. He finds a security guard at a Motel 6, and the security guard agrees to help him. Upon their return, though, the white van was gone, and so was Gonzalo Ramirez. It is Ramirez's body that will be found later. An investigation will turn up multiple suspects, including one who may have masterminded the crime.
So this is the case of Norma Patricia Esparza. And she goes by Patricia, so we're going to refer to her by that name for the rest of this episode. How does this all start with Patricia?
Patricia Esparza came from a small farming community in Mexico. And it was a pretty hard life because they had no running water and there were no paved roads. Her mother brought Patricia and her two siblings to the United States for a better life. Patricia went to a very good high school, and she excelled in track.
She meets a man who might not be the best guy to get involved with, right?
Yeah, his name's Gianni Van. She meets Gianni Van, and they date for less than a year. According to Patricia, he was just a little too possessive.
Controlling, yeah.
Now, about a month or two after she breaks up with Gianni, she meets a man at a club. It's El Cortez. It may actually have been a restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
But everyone refers to it as a club.
And so, some of the restaurants, you know, they're restaurant by day, but by night they move the tables out and it gets a little crazy.
They danced and then he asked her for her phone number and she gave it to him because according to her, he seemed like a nice guy. Well, he wanted to set up breakfast the next morning and she said, well, can I bring my sister and a friend along? So they all go out to breakfast.
He seems normal.
And then he offers to take Patricia and her friend back. And after dropping the friend off, they go for a walk around the campus. This is at Pomona College.
And she lives on campus at a dorm.
So Patricia and Gonzalo are walking around the campus and he tells her that he's thirsty. And he asks if they can go back to her dorm to get a drink of water. So she invites him to her dorm.
Yeah, he's finding any excuse to get her back to a private area.
Inside, they're talking and
he starts coming on to her, trying to instigate sex, whatever. And she's not into it.
Yeah. And she tells him no. And he begins to get even more aggressive about it and even accusing her of leading him on.
Yeah. He starts tearing off her clothes and it becomes an attack. She has a history of sexual abuse in her life. So this is a very horrible situation for her to be in.
So what does she do after Gonzalo leaves?
Well, the next morning she'll tell her roommate what has gone on and she'll visit the campus nurse and tell her pretty much what happened.
Yeah, she tells the nurse that she had been date raped and that she wanted a morning after pill.
And the nurse gives her one, right?
Right. And this is someone dropping the ball because this is a report of a rape. It's not treated as such. It's treated as, oh, you had unprotected sex. Here's a pill.
Yeah. And universities and colleges, they don't like to report violent crime or rapes on their campuses because it could affect their enrollments and tuition. So this is just a normal thing that they don't like to do. So whether or not this went unreported intentionally, or if Patricia didn't want to really go that route, because there's a lot of reasons why people don't report rape. And it's because they know that it's their word against somebody else's. They've been abused. There's a lot of different factors there. I did a whole episode on my peripheral about why people don't report rape. And there's a lot of mixed information about whether or not she informed this nurse, or if the nurse knew about it, or if the nurse only knew that she wanted a morning after pill. But regardless, a ball is dropped at this point, and we're not really that sure if it's the school or if she's not reporting it. But she does tell her roommate, and her roommate will convey that later when questioned.
Within a few weeks of the rape, her ex-boyfriend Gianni Van calls her up and she wants him to come over. What would you think, Justin? Don't you think she's feeling pretty vulnerable and she could use some company?
Yeah, she wants to feel protected. Obviously, this is somebody that's familiar to her.
So he comes over and she tells him what happened to her.
They end up going out to a bar.
Yes, there's actually a group of them that go out to the El Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
It's Gianni Van, a friend of his named Jailbird, his girlfriend Julie Rojas, Cody Tran. Cody Tran has a transmission shop.
And while they're at this bar nightclub, Patricia starts freaking out. She's having a panic attack. She's acting very uncomfortable. And they ask her, what's going on? What's happening? And she says, that's the guy. And Ramirez happens to have walked past her at that very moment.
When she had told Gianni about the rape, he had gotten upset.
And she mentioned where she met this guy. So this is a regular hangout for him, the Cortez.
So perhaps Gianni wants to see this guy in person.
Yeah. And he gets his wish.
Now, Gianni and the others had taken two vehicles.
They were in the van.
Yeah, Cody Shannon, and Julie were in a white van, and Gianni and Patricia were in his gray Mazda. And they follow Ramirez and his friend from El Cortez. And they get about a mile down the road when the white van strikes Ramirez's vehicle from behind.
So the van hits a vehicle, and they're in, Patricia's in a car behind the van.
Right. And Ramirez will jump out of the vehicle to look and see how badly damaged his vehicle is. People will get out of the van and attack him. So he's being grabbed. He's being struck. And Reyes, depending on where you read, but in some accounts, he says that he's worried that one of the men that has come out of the van has a gun. Either way, I think he feels...
they're outnumbered.
He's outnumbered. Yeah. So he takes off. Now, he's not just running. He's going to get help. And he runs to a Motel 6 to get a security guard to come back with him so that he's not just on his own.
And that's when he finds that the vehicles are gone.
Right. Just his friend's vehicle is there. But the white van and the gray Mazda that was behind it, they're gone. Hours later, there's a report at the police station that there's a body on the side of Sand Canyon Road. And the body is covered in what appears to be blue towels.
And it's been hacked up. That'll be the body of Gonzalo Ramirez.
Yes, he had been blindfolded and wrapped in blue towels. Underneath the towels, they saw that his head and body was hacked over 30 times by either a machete or a meat cleaver.
It was obvious he had been tortured and killed.
An investigation is started, and as they go through Ramirez's things, they find a name on his phone bill. It's Patty, P-A-T-Y. Speaking to Ramirez's roommate, they come to find out that this is Patricia Esparza.
But it's said that they're asking his roommate, do you know anyone that might want to kill him? And his roommate says, well, he was bragging about raping a woman. So maybe you should start there.
And it just so happens that there's this woman's name on his phone bill. So, I would say it's a good place to start the investigation.
Yep.
They also are checking out these blue towels, and they're the kind that are used in
automotive shops.
They track down Patricia Esparza and they bring her in for questioning. She doesn't really know anything. She doesn't have much to tell them. She will say that she had been raped by Gonzalo Ramirez.
She'll be questioned multiple times.
She does ask if he's dead.
They don't tell her right off the bat.
I think it's a good question because if the police are questioning you about someone in particular, they've either committed a crime or they're deceased, right?
Yeah, they've victimized somebody or they're a victim.
She will tell them about Gianni Van, that she told him about the rape, but she says that Van didn't seem like he was going to do anything about it. He was just upset. But the police suspect that she's not telling them everything.
Yeah, they think that she's holding back. I don't know if you want to call omitting the truth lying, but they feel that she's not being totally forthcoming with them.
Days later, Gianni Van drives Patricia Esparza to Las Vegas. He'd made it clear to her that they needed to get married because then she wouldn't be compelled to testify against him. Police will go and arrest Gianni Van, but because they find out about this marriage, they end up dropping the case. They feel like they can't do much with it.
All they have is what Patricia has said against him, but that's it. They don't know any other piece of the case, so it's just a hunch, no evidence.
Right. They know what she said, but they can't make her talk. And certainly Gianni Van's not talking. Gianni Van, when he is interrogated, he doesn't portray himself as anything but a gentle person. He wouldn't do something like that.
Yeah.
And it will be quite some time before the case is reopened.
Her marriage with Van will be a little interesting and odd. They won't even live together. So over the next few years, they kind of grow apart. She will meet her new husband, Jorge.
Well, yeah, and Jorge is also from Mexico originally, is a well-respected neuroscientist. He loves Patricia, and he has said that it was first her brain that he fell in love with. Now, Patricia, she graduated Pomona College with a degree, and she also got a PhD in clinical psychology from DePaul University. It wasn't long before he proposed, but she had to tell him that she was already married, which was, I'm sure, very awkward. And even more awkward was the fact that she refused to tell him why she was married still, even though she had nothing to do with this first husband.
Yeah, there's no man in her life, but she's married. And, you know, some people, they do separate and just never deal with the divorce process, but she's not telling him exactly what's going on. But
he doesn't let that deter him. He still really wants to marry her. And it takes quite some time, a number of years, before Gianni is finally tracked down and agrees to a divorce. It's about 8 months after that that Jorge can finally have this wedding ceremony with the love of his life, Patricia. She and her husband, Jorge, move to Geneva. They're working and living in Geneva. In 2007, Esparza becomes a consultant in Geneva for the World Health Organization. In 2009, she becomes a professor at Webster University in Geneva. And in September of that year, she gives birth to a baby daughter.
And during this time, she's coming back to the States to do speeches or to work at different Webster universities. So she's coming and going.
And going to conferences.
Yeah.
Well, in October of 2012, Patricia Esparza is flying into Boston, and she will be heading on to St. Louis from there so she can go to a meeting. It has to do with Webster University's campuses from all around. They'll have a meeting of the faculty in St. Louis.
But while she's in Boston, she gets a rude interruption.
She is arrested.
They put cuffs on her and they take her into questioning. And they are wanting to know more about her ex-husband, Gianni.
Now, the reason they arrest her is because in 2010, they resurrected this case. They also found out that she and Gianni were divorced, which means now they can compel her to testify. There's no longer this protection over Gianni. They also had done DNA testing on some blood that they found in a transmission shop, the one that Cody Trans was at. This blood was proven to be Gonzalo Ramirez's.
Multiple assailants here, suspects, and they know that they can question her and get her to testify against Gianni.
Yeah, they really feel like this case is coming together now. And they're hoping that Patricia can basically tie this case up in a neat little bow for them.
At first, she's not real cooperative, but they're persuasive, aren't they?
Yeah, very persuasive. It takes some time, but she starts opening up and giving them more information. And now the case, as they can see it, is that she did tell Gianni who had raped her, and she did know that they had attacked him, but she maintains that she didn't know for a while that they had murdered him.
She tells them that after they left the bar, that they ran into him on the road, and then her and Julie will end up leaving the scene in the other car.
Yeah, they'll leave in the Mazda, and they'll go to another bar. So she doesn't know what's going on with Ramirez.
Then Julie will end up taking her to the auto shop, Trans Auto Shop, and she will see Ramirez restrained in a chair, badly beaten.
His arms have chains on them and they're pulled up above his head.
She sees this, and what does he say to her?
Well, he speaks in Spanish, but he basically says, "I don't know you."
There's two different versions of this story. She either says, "That's him," or "You got the wrong one." Now, that will have different connotations later, but either "That's him and you're beating him," or you got the wrong one. You should let him go.
But what doesn't change is that she maintains that she told them to stop. She didn't want the man hurt.
Yeah. So she leaves and she doesn't know what happens after that, what becomes of him.
And she will say that later she asks Gianni, what did you do with him? What did you do with Ramirez? And Gianni replies, we let him go.
We set him free. The investigators are taking her statements and they're building a case against Gianni, Jailbird, Julie, all of them. She has wrapped it up in a nice, neat package for them, and they're able to go after these guys. In Gianni's trial, they use Patricia's testimony. They also use Julie and Diane's testimony, and they're able to get convictions against him and Jailbird. And this is a serious thing because we have a man that's been abducted, mutilated, tortured, and dumped on the side of the road. They got their murderers, right? It's a good thing. Then the prosecutor turns around and tells Julie and Diane, I need you to testify against Patricia Esparza. And he gives Julie immunity and Diane a reduced sentence for their testimonies against Patricia. That gets a little hairy, right?
Right. And I need to mention that Cody Trans is not around because he and Diane have had some issues where he just happened to put a knife to her throat and threaten her life. So she took out a restraining order and it culminated with the police and Cody being involved in a standoff. The result of this was Cody shoots himself.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called StoryWorth. StoryWorth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, StoryWorth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/GenY. That's StoryWorth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
So everyone in this group in Patricia's past, not really good people. Patricia seems to be the only one that has contributed to society, made a better life for herself, and is pretty much an upstanding professional citizen. But the prosecutors want to go after her and give these other two women immunity and reduced sentences to get a conviction against Patricia.
Well, the reason they're going after Patricia is, I mentioned in the summary, that they believe that she masterminded this whole thing. They look back over it and they say, wait a minute, Gianni Vaughn would never have gone after Gonzalo Ramirez if it hadn't been for Patricia saying, he raped me. So they believe that she wanted revenge. So they obviously don't care what kind of a life she has, what kind of qualifications she has, what kind of academic
level she's achieved, whatever it may be. And they want to nab her because they feel that she orchestrated this whole thing.
And Gianni Vaughn is saying that it wasn't him, it was Cody Tran that did all this. That he felt threatened by Cody Tran, and that's why he had to go along with it, and all he did was help dispose of the body. But they're definitely going after Patricia as what you might call the ringleader.
Yeah, the kingpin.
So they're really trying to tighten the screws here. They want Patricia to just come clean. And they say, right now, you are the victim. But if you're not going to tell us exactly what happened, if you're not going to come clean, then you will go from being a victim to being a murderer.
The DA, the prosecutor, offers her a deal. He says, manslaughter, 3 years in prison, 3 years behind bars. She's a professor. She's got kids. She's got a family. She says, no, I'm going to go to trial for this. Screw that. I'm not into that. In her eyes, she merely pointed somebody out and others took action that she was not privy to. So she turns down this initial deal.
After she turns down the deal, she walks outside and stands before the media and tells them what happened and says, I am innocent. I did not murder that man. Why should I take a deal when I have to admit guilt, when I have to admit to something that I didn't do?
It's pretty powerful. So the prosecutor goes after her with a first degree murder charge, as if she was the one that told these men to do this. She's just as culpable in this murder as the man with the meat cleaver. This is what you would refer to typically as overcharging somebody, but he's going for it. During some of the questioning in the trial, Julie and Diane will flip the story around a little bit from they were in a white van and Patricia was in a car behind the van to all of them were in the van and they all were in on it. So their testimony has changed from their first trials of the other men. The reason for this is they're saying that they discussed murdering him. They discussed what was going to happen to this man. So therefore, they had prior knowledge of the murder. And so Patricia knew what was going to happen. But they had immunity and reduced sentences, so they're not going to get a first-degree murder charge. Something else happens, and this is about the time where I start losing respect for the prosecution. The prosecution is using the prior rape as Patricia's motivation, her motive for wanting to murder this man, which is obvious. It's this man attacked and hurt you so bad that you wanted retribution. Yet, during trial, the prosecution will question two different detectives, two different police officers who knew about the initial rape allegation and got statements from Patricia. They will say that during the attack, the more Patricia fought, the more she was hurt during the attack, and she stopped fighting back or consented. And the prosecution spins this as, so she consented and there wasn't actually a rape. Let that one sink in for a little bit. So the prosecution is using the rape as motive and then spinning it to say that it didn't even happen, and that makes Patricia look like an even worse person because she had a man murdered for nothing. He's trying to get it both ways.
Do we even need to give commentary on that, Justin?
I will give commentary later, but it's looking bad for Patricia. The trial is not going her way. She's, as we said, she's been abused in the past before the rape even happened. And all these things, I think, are factors in her life. And when you feel the world closing in on you like this, sometimes you just want to give up. You just want to cocoon into a safe place and hope it all goes away. So what was her past?
Patricia gave testimony that from the age of 5, she was sexually abused by her own father. And those that knew her said that she really buried herself in her books, and that was her refuge. And they believe that was probably, like, I guess you could say academics were her refuge. And that's why she did so well in high school and in college, because she could devote herself to her studies. The amount of abuse that she suffered as a young child, it stayed with her.
It's a horrible situation. And then for her to be attacked by another man in her dorm room, well, I kind of understand between self-preservation and being a prior victim of sexual abuse, why she would stop fighting. But that's not called consent.
Right. I think some people will have trouble following her story because they're thinking, well, wait a minute. If you were abused, why didn't you tell somebody? Or if you were raped, why didn't you yell at the top of your lungs? Why didn't you go to the police station? But the trouble is when you've been abused, when you've been raped by your own father and then by a person that you thought was a good person, you're being re-victimized. And then you have the detectives who are talking to you and treating you in such a manner that you feel like you're being victimized again. There's really no safe place for her from the start of this whole thing. As soon as the police start trying to track down the killers, she isn't treated like someone who they have sympathy for. They're just trying to solve a crime. I'll say it. They do an excellent job investigating this case and figuring out what happened for the most part. The trouble is that when you have someone who's been a victim again and again and again, and then to help close your case using your theory, you go after someone who's a victim and re-victimize them again and again with what you're telling them. And trust me, if you look up some of the statements that these police officers told her, that what they said to her, it's pretty horrifying. And you have to wonder, how was she supposed to act? How was she supposed to do the right thing and just come out and tell them everything when she's being treated like this?
But at the same time, she was helping. She was telling them the details. She was explaining to them, this was my boyfriend, my ex-boyfriend, and I was semi-afraid of him. And I'm not going to go against him.
Yeah, she felt threatened by Gianni. And this is the whole thing, is you have someone who's been victimized for so long and they're being threatened from different directions. I just don't know how she's supposed to give them what they want when that's what's happening.
She left Gianni in the beginning because she felt that he was too controlling. And then she's back with him. This horrible night happens. And then he says, we're going to get married. She's going along with it, but she might not be okay with it. She definitely felt threatened by Gianni. She described him threatening her, threatening her mother. He would call her mother's house and quote unquote, check in on her mom. Lots of controlling behaviors. And I think this is Gianni checking in to make sure that they're not rolling over on him. He's trying to keep control of this situation because he knows he's done something terrible. They don't live together, but he still wants to keep tabs on everybody.
That's not how they're describing it. The authorities are describing it as, well, we have all these pictures of you with your husband and you are smiling. But Justin, can't you imagine that if there's a picture being taken that Gianni's like, come on, smile.
Yeah, you're in the moment. And so this is the picture they paint, is she marries this guy to protect him. And then once she thinks that the heat's over, then she divorces him and then moves away to Geneva to run away from this horrible crime she's committed. This is their theory against her.
So because things aren't going well for her in the trial, she starts to regret not taking the deal. And the reason is not because she's waffling out of guilt or anything like that. She has a family. She has a husband that she loves. She has a daughter that she's dedicated to. And she just cannot bear to not be with them. And she feels like maybe she hurt them in some way by standing strong against what she felt was an injustice. You know, they're trying to get her to accept that she's a murderer, and she does not believe that she is. She knows she's not.
Well, she's going from a 3-year sentence to possibly a life sentence. So what does she end up taking?
Patricia will take a deal. It's a manslaughter charge, and she gets 6 years behind bars.
So double what the first deal or offer was.
Yeah, the prosecutors, they don't have a lot of sympathy for her, but they'll also take a gimme. And the gimme is they're very satisfied knowing that she has had to plead guilty. Because it wasn't about the sentence. It wasn't, oh, she needs to go away forever. Think about it. They already offered her 3 years early on. And then now they're offering her 6.
Yeah.
How guilty do they really think she is? I hate to say it, and I know I've been criticized for going after prosecutors in the past, but this just seems so obvious that, if she was really the killer, if she was the mastermind, you'd want her put away. But they're saying 3 years, 6 years. I think they're satisfied seeing this woman have to get up and say, guilty, I plead guilty.
I get it. She was there that night. She saw a crime happening, a violent felony happening in front of her. She did not report it. She did not inform or report to the police when questioned directly about it. Neither did Julie or Diane. But Julie and Diane aren't getting, they're getting off pretty easy when I feel they have a heavier hand in this situation than even Patricia.
Yeah, but the prosecutors don't set it out that way. They don't describe it in that fashion. What they say is that she wanted revenge for the not rape, remember?
Oh, yeah.
So she's the guilty party, yet they're going to give her 6 years.
And that's the thing that really bothers me is they're using her roommate's testimony of the description of what happened that night during the rape. They're using police testimony of her description of the rape. They even cite that she went to the nurse the next day on campus, but then they're discrediting the rape or insinuating that didn't happen. When I look at this, if I just remove the rape out of this equation and just look at it as she pointed a guy out that she had a strong dislike for, and then other people went after him and did bad things to him, and she saw bad things happening and she did not report that when questioned, I see that as obstruction of justice. I see that as concealing a crime, lying to police officers. That's a much less harsh charge and sentence than first degree murder.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
What you're saying, Justin, is if we really try hard, if we look over this whole case, not as the prosecutors did, but look at it objectively and say, if you really need to charge her with something, what would you charge her with? You're saying obstruction of justice.
Yeah, because she admitted seeing this man in duress, being attacked, being chained up, and she lied about that. That's what we know from her. Now, she claims she did not have prior knowledge that they were going to murder him. And she even asked the police, is he dead?
So, yeah, she didn't know.
Yeah. If you believe her, you know, I tend to believe her because unlike the rest of the people in her group, she's the only one that seems to have any credibility.
So, okay, going down this road, what's the maximum sentence that they could give her for obstruction of justice in this case?
Maximum is 3 years. That's if they really want to throw the book at you. But as we've seen others get probation for helping dispose of bodies, as we've seen Colin Davis or Robert Durst walk free when they're the masterminds behind murders, I'm kind of thinking that they could have taken her life as a mother, a family member, an upstanding citizen who's contributing to society as mitigating factors to a obstruction of justice charge and given her no jail time, but punished her. You know, somewhere in between no jail time to 3 years, I think was appropriate. Giving her 3 years for manslaughter is kind of weird, but then coming back and getting 7 or 6 years is pretty harsh because that's going to destroy her life. But objectively, I think the most they should have charged her with was obstruction of justice. I feel like they went after first degree murder because they knew she would take a deal because they overcharged.
It was a threat to her way of life. She had found happiness. We already described that this is a person who had been victimized in the past by her father and then by Gonzalo Ramirez, and then she's finally got happiness. She has the man that she loves. She's got her daughter, and they're telling her, you're going away for a long time. You'll never be out again.
You're going to lose everything.
She describes that pain of, what am I doing to my family? Who cares what charge I have? I just need to get out and be with them. I have a duty as a wife, as a mother. I have the life that I want. Why do I throw it all away on principle? And this is where, throughout the whole case, if you're paying attention, I think you'll see that this is a person who has struggled. She wants to be happy. This isn't a person going out to find someone to kill. She's not seeking revenge. She just wants to build a happy life for herself. And yet, who's giving her that chance?
Prosecution's going after her hard.
Gonzalo Ramirez had family too. He was married. He had two little ones. And he had brothers. And when they found out what happened to him, they were devastated.
And they want justice. And they deserve justice.
And I know we've described him as being a rapist. Even as a rapist, he doesn't deserve to die by being hacked to death. When she went in to report a date rape, that should have been reported to the police. Someone should have assisted her. Our country, as we know, does not respond well to rape. So you have Gonzalo Ramirez dead, hacked to death, tortured. You have Patricia Esparza, who has been run ragged through the legal system here, accused of being a murderer and a mastermind. And again, all you have to do is look at her history. Look at what she's accomplished. Look at the kind of life that she built for herself. And I don't honestly know how you could come up with she was a mastermind of a crime. And in fact, it felt like she was victimized all the way through by the very people that should have been there to protect her.
Yeah.
Which are the authorities. And I guess that just speaks again to our lack of compassion and our lack of understanding of what it means to be a rape victim. And I know in preparation for this case, Justin and I have tried to understand that better because we're not exactly people with experience. So I don't know if it's fortunate or unfortunate, but if we reach out to people who have been victimized in such a way, they're able to give us their insights. They're able to tell us what it's like when you are a victim and you are being re-victimized. And it's a horrible feeling and you feel powerless. And if you think about it, it makes total sense that she's not saying everything right away because she's being threatened by the authorities. They can put her away forever. And how is that supposed to make her feel? So again, you have two victims. You have Gonzalo Ramirez murdered, and you have Patricia Esparza, who's been ripped from her family.
Rape can happen to anybody, and I've actually have experienced it in my life, so I am pretty sensitive to it. If you want to hear about my story, you can listen to the peripheral because I'd share it there. I won't take the time here to talk about it. But what disgusted me about this case is when the prosecutor insinuates that when Patricia stops fighting, she is consenting. And Ramirez absolutely was murdered, tortured, and butchered that night. But if I were to use the prosecutor's same logic of when you stop fighting, you're consenting, then should we believe that when Ramirez stopped fighting back that night, he was consenting to his own murder? I don't believe that, but it seems that that's the logic the prosecutor wants to use. So he consented to it. If that's the way he wants to play it, that's the way I'll go with it. She should walk because according to the prosecutor, everything was fine.
Well, unfortunately, she can't just walk, can she?
No.
She took this deal and she did it for her family, which I think when we talk about intent, that's one thing I like to bring up. Her intent all along was just to be with her family. The intent of apparently the prosecutors was just to get a victory here once again. Put her away because she's a criminal mastermind.
I don't think the world's a better place with her behind bars.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.